Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of the coaching profession with cutting-edge practitioners, authors, and thought leaders. Coaching Uncaged brings you pioneering thinking to enrich the art and science of coaching in all its forms. And now, introducing your host, Robert Stevenson.
Welcome to today's interview. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Nash Popovich. Nash is the founder, co-founder of Personal Consultancy. He's a lecturer, a speaker, and author. He's also the program leader on the Masters of Integrative Counseling and Coaching, which is all based on personal consultancy. And it's with great pleasure that I begin our conversation today. Hey, Nash, how are you doing?
Very well. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's great. I remember speaking with you a couple of years ago now when you came and did a lecture at one of our Animus evenings. And it was really interesting hearing your ideas and thoughts around how coaching and counseling and therapies sort of come together in this sort of, I guess, your unique blend, which is personal consulting. So perhaps you could just start by sharing with us sort of your definition of that.
Okay, well, let me start from my background a little bit. I was trained in existential therapy, and existential therapy is very useful approach. It can be very useful with clients, but what I was not happy about, after a few years of practicing, I simply felt that was not enough. As many other therapies, psychodynamic approaches and person-centered approach and so on, they can be very good in actually dealing with what's going on inside the client. But what a lot of clients noticed that these changes of dealing with internal conflicts don't necessarily lead to tangible behavioral change, something that, if you like, people out there can see. We have other approaches that deal with that. So, for example, CBT or coaching or solution-focused therapy are much more proactive and intend to bring some sort of tangible changes, to bring behavioral changes or help clients achieve certain goals. So I was thinking, why not to combine those two? Wouldn't be ideal to actually have both, to have a chance with one practitioner to deal with whatever is going inside you, with your internal conflicts, with your emotions, with past experiences, with maybe perhaps traumas and so on, and also deal with, help you to achieve your goal, help you to make some sort of tangible changes. And this was the motive for developing and creating personal consultancy, which combines both. Let me just clarify one thing. It's we usually say consultancy combines counseling and coaching, but just to be more precise, it actually combines number of counseling approaches and coaching.
And one of the things that I remember us talking about was this idea of, when we talk about combining, it's not an integration or a blending of all of the approaches into one thing. It's more of an idea of using the appropriate approach at the appropriate time in that interaction with the client.
Precisely. Yes, that's a very good point, because very often when people talk about or think about integration, then think about blending everything together in a way that we blend gin and tonic. So when you create a gin and tonic, you don't actually see the difference between these two. They're all together. Gin and tonic are mixed. We think about personal consultancy more in terms of drinking tequila. So you have salt first, then you have tequila, then you have lime later. And these three stages are separate. So in personal consultancy, this is the same. We don't actually blend these approaches. We use them in different stages of the process, which is why we call that demarcated integration rather than blended integration.
Well, I think that's something that's really interesting. I know a lot of practitioners who are coaches or health practitioners, perhaps fitness practitioners, yoga practitioners, and they talk about blending their approach. And I often wonder, is it a blending? Is it a true blending? Or is it an integration that is a stepped approach, but the practitioner has yet to realize that actually they're doing different things at different times as opposed to everything at the same time?
Right. I actually feel that it's not very useful and even can be counterproductive to blend different approaches, because they are coming, if you like, from different philosophies and different working modalities. So let me just talk a little bit about those basic modalities, which we call being with the client and doing with the client. Yeah. Being with the client is a modality where you try to create a good relationship with your client, so that the client can open up, express herself, and feel safe and comfortable with you. And just being present there for the client is something which is invaluable. It is actually an intervention in itself. This is why I believe that computers or robots will never be able to replace us, because they can't be with us. You need another human being to be with you. However, this may not be enough. We also need sometimes to be more proactive with clients, introduce certain interventions that would help them to resolve their internal conflicts or conflicts with their environment, let's say relationships and so on. So for that, you need to be in different state of mind. And if you try to mix these two, you won't go very far.
This is really interesting. I sort of recognize, you know, as a school, Animus, a lot of our teachings, or the kind of part of our fundamental, is that being with, you know, how can you sit with somebody and explore without rushing to solve something, but understand what is that something and how is that something showing up for that person before we begin to look at what we might do. And often there is a natural shift into the action once the withness has been created. So it's almost like you don't need to pursue the change. We pursue the relationship, and in that relationship, a change is created.
Well, you don't need me. You describe personal consultancy very well. Exactly. And this is, you see how it comes to us naturally. So personal consultancy is not something new, something that we like invented. We just basically put together what some practitioners already are doing spontaneously. They are combining these things, and they are mindful about different modalities and different ways of working with the client. And they're capable of combining them.
And the word mindful there is really interesting. That the my interpretation of that is to hold in mind what it is that we are doing in any moment, and having taken the opportunity to reflect and choose the interaction that we might bring next into the space with the client. And I think there's something that coaches sort of have to, I guess, practice or develop as a skill, the ability to sit with and also to formulate what might we do next.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that we need to realize, and one thing that's really important, that our profession is not natural. What I mean by that, if we just behave naturally as we would with friends in a pub or in a restaurant or something like that, we wouldn't need our profession. We wouldn't need a therapist, counselors, or coaches. We are a profession precisely because we do things differently than what your friend would do to you. And what your friend would do to you? First thing, if you start talking about your issue, he would offer a solution. He will tell you what to do, right? So that's what we need to, what we try to cure our clients, our students from, actually, that natural reaction to help others. Yes, we are in helping profession, but you actually have to help client to help themselves, not to sort of help them directly, because otherwise you take away their autonomy. They become dependent on you. So basically, when we interview our applicants for our program, most of them come and say, why do you want to study this? I want to help people. Well, okay, this is the first thing that I want to cure you from.
And that's interesting that we talk about that as a, you know, needing to cure us as practitioners from that desire to help, because that desire then interferes with the process and doesn't allow autonomy for the client to exist. But then we become the important piece as opposed to the client being the important piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You summarized that really well. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the thing, you hold back that sort of natural desire and control it. I'm not saying that we should be unhelpful. What I'm saying is that you need to control that desire and use it appropriately at right time.
And I like that idea that it's not something that we are getting rid of, we are using appropriately. Because sometimes when I talk to other practitioners, part of what they sort of go for is this, they don't exist in the space. It's so focused on the client that they don't exist. So what's going on for them doesn't come into it. And I'm much more of the mind that the relationship exists. We both exist, and it's part of that that creates the exploration, the understanding, the uncovering in the coaching.
Absolutely. Personal consultancy starts from a three-dimensional model, and there are three axes of that model. One is the client, another is the practitioner, and the third one is the relationship. So we take the relationship almost like a third person in the room, because the relationship has its minds on its own. And basically, that sort of relationship dynamic that to some extent depends on the client and the practitioner, it has also some sort of unpredictable element. And this is what we have to embrace, that uncertainty in a way, but always work from the position of working collaboratively with the client. So we are always together, every step. So personal consultancy has four stages and things like that. But when we move from one way of working to another way of working, we first of all ask clients, are you ready for that move? Do you want now to be more like to do more proactive stuff and things like that? Whenever we try to use an intervention, we ask clients. We explain what it is all about, what can be achieved with that intervention, say, do you want to do it? So it's always, it's crucial to work collaboratively with the client.
It's interesting because I sort of think about the way that you're talking about how you work. I think about how we work at Animus, and I see so much synergy. I see so much correlation in how we work, this idea of we're working with somebody. It's not at or to, but it's a collaboration. And in that collaboration, things are offered and discussed, and together we decide where we go, as opposed to, as the practitioner, I go, right, this is what we're going to do now, and this is how we're going to do it.
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting also that almost paradoxically, in order to work in that way, in order to not to jump immediately with some solutions and things like that, you have to be very confident. People are... I know sometimes my students or unexperienced practitioners, they come up with a lot of things because they think that otherwise the client will think that they're doing not enough or they're not doing nothing or they want to show how much they know, you know. And yet, this is actually maybe the last thing that the client wants. They just want to be heard to start off with. So you need to have confidence in order to actually not do straight away.
And I guess there's something interesting there for me around how do we enable students or coaches or practitioners to develop that confidence so that they can then hold that space? Because I've never thought about it as you need the confidence to hold that space. I've always thought about it. There is a practice skill that comes over time that allows you to know that something's going to happen. So you don't need to do it because it's going to happen anyway. But how do we create that confidence, or how might one go about creating that confidence?
I can tell you what we do, how we do that. So when we started the first module in the first year, has 16 sessions, 16 teaching days. And plus Saturday teaching days, but that's different now. For the first 8 practice sessions, half of the module, we don't allow. So we practice in triads, right? So the observer, there is client, and there is a practitioner. They play different roles, right? But those students who are in the role of practitioners, they are not allowed to talk at all. This causes enormous frustration to students to start off with. But in time, after a few weeks, they learn that actually just being there for the client without having to say anything actually has some sort of positive effect. And also, they can focus on the client fully rather than thinking what to say next, which we normally do when we talk to each other.
So this is really interesting, because this idea of forcing the silence. I know that on one of our teaching modules, we spend some time with the Carl Rogers and the Nancy Klein work, where it's not about what you're saying; it's about how are you being in this relationship.
Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly the same. So that's the idea, and that's then build the because they see the results. They see that something is happening there in the room, even if you don't talk, they start building confidence that that's okay. And that confidence then lasts further on in their further training and practice, because when they are not sure what to do with the client, they can always fall back on that state. Just go back in that sort of, what to use Buberian term, I-thou relationship. When you create that I-thou bubble with your client, you have nothing to worry about. You don't have that pressure to think about, oh, what do I need to do next? Oh, am I doing the right thing? Or whatever. You are there.
I guess this throws up a little contradiction in training. So I guess for some of the coaching bodies, less training or more coaching bodies, but I guess it affects the training, because there are a lot of coaching bodies that says, this is what coaching is. This is what it is to be a practitioner. And these are the things that you have to hold in mind. So as a practitioner, you're holding all of that competency in mind as you work, whilst at the same time, you're talking about this I-thou relationship, which isn't about thinking. It's about being, and it sort of throws up this contradiction in the sort of the sphere of coaching training.
Yes, absolutely. And this is exactly that sort of contradiction is something that we try to resolve by starting that personal consultancy training program or integrative counseling and coaching, so that we can actually play with it and enable both. So, I mean, it's very interesting that we often discuss and talk to clients about their experiences, right? But we rarely think that actually a session with us is an experience for the client.
Mm.
We have to start thinking about our sessions as experiences. So experience is never, so we can never be completely like, in our heads, because every session is experience for both of us, for the client and for us as practitioners.
And I guess there's a mastery that comes when one is able, like driving a car. When we're driving, we don't think about all the things that we did when we were learning to drive. Those become part of our DNA, as it were. So I guess there's mastery to where those competencies are just part of how we work, but we're able to hold a different state and create that experience, as you say, when working with our clients.
Yes. Yes, I mean, this is the idea that is something that there is that sort of tacit element in our practice that cannot be put in words, it cannot be formulated, cannot be completely, as with a good teacher, a good nurse, and something like that, there is something that is sort of simply beyond instructions, if you like. And you get that through practice. We are just helping our students to get on the right road, and then they can actually go as far as they want.
Yeah, and you know, it's, I'm always reminded that when I train and people say, so, you know, how long will it take me to get so I can do it like that or like somebody else? And, you know, when will I be at that point? And it's like, well, we all arrive at that point at different stages or different times, but it's the practice that enables that, and being able to get into the arena and practice our craft that allows us to develop the skill of the craft.
I say with every session we travel that journey. It's just with more practice you travel, you're a bit quicker and traveling the journey than if you're not very 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 experienced. And I mean, even very very experienced practitioners can actually forget some basic stuff. It happened to me like, I think about now a couple of years ago, or maybe a year ago, or something like that. I had a client and I was really, really, like, tried everything and we're not going very far. So what I then realized, I actually got a little bit arrogant, like using all that sort of quite sophisticated ways of dealing with client, and forgot about basic stuff. So next session, I'm just sitting there with a client, being with a client, summarizing, paraphrasing, empathizing with a client, nothing else. And that worked better than all that sort of complicated stuff that I tried to do before that.
Well, I guess this just goes back to what you were saying earlier, is that there is a necessity to create a good relationship. And that relationship is part, has a life of its own, and that is part of the process. And when we forego the relationship for the tools and the interventions, then there is a sort of a critical component missing from the intervention or the interaction between us and our clients.
Yes. Yes, and in fact, these two both work very well together. So, for example, first of all, I want to say that there is a place in personal consultancy for using techniques and interventions and so on, definitely. But you're far more likely to be successful with particular intervention if you have a good relationship with the client, because they're more open then to follow those instructions and actually take on board that particular intervention. So interventions are better if you have a good foundations.
And I think, you know, with a lot of people that I've spoken to over the last few months doing the podcasts, is that the idea of the relationship keeps coming back. The and how important and fundamental it is to how we work as practitioners. It's as well as what we do, it's the how we show up to do those things and the relationships we create with our clients that form, you know, a fundamental cornerstone of the change that is created. And without that relationship, without that trust, without that rapport, we can't go to those shadow sides or those deeper sides or those more challenging sides.
Absolutely. And this is what is unique about our profession. I mean, you know, if we could rely only on techniques and interventions, things like that, well, people can get interventions from books, self-help books, or from some sort of CBT program, computer programs and things like that. That's not why they come to us. Of course, these interventions are important, but it's completely different if you do particular intervention with somebody with whom you have a good relationship, than if you do an intervention from reading a book. It just doesn't stick.
So that's so interesting, because, you know, there are a lot of, I'm just glancing over at my bookshelf, there are a lot of self-help books out there. And it's interesting that if what you're saying, if we take on board what you're saying, that it's the interaction that enables it to stick and to create the change.
Yes.
There's a question here about, so what do the books do?
Books can be very, very useful. I myself published a very comprehensive self-help book, Personal Synthesis, that has over 60 topics and so on. I just wanted to put everything in one place. So what you get from books can be really, really useful. However, there is no you can never go in depth with books as much as you can with another human being, with a professional, with a practitioner. And we know that ourselves. I mean, you probably read all these books and things like that, but sometimes you may feel need to see actually a therapist or coach and things like that. It's a different thing. So definitely self-help books are useful. I'm not saying that we should abandon them, but these are different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, because I love a good book. And one of the things that I do realize, though, is that when you're working with somebody, they notice things that the book can't notice, because the book can't see your reactions or hear your tonal change. And a human being can, and therefore the practitioner can delve into that subtlety of your being to then explore in relationship to the challenge that you're facing.
You nailed it. That's exactly right. And this is to go back to what I already mentioned. Basically, when you read a book, you're mostly in your mind. This is a cognitive a process, right? This is a cognitive activity. When you're with somebody, you're actually experiencing that. And that sort of additional dimension of experience is essential. You don't have experience with a book, but you have experience with a counselor or therapist or personal consultant.
Yeah, I'm really tuning into this notion of the experience, and each session being an experience that is part of that client's existence, and how we can sort of tune into what's the experience that we bring without trying to create or make something. So it's not about making the experience a thing, but just recognizing that it is part of that person's life, that their life isn't separate to the coaching.
Yes, absolutely. So when we teach this, we talk about that there are two presents. So client may talk about his past, about future, and about his present, what's happening with his husband or children right now, things like that. But there is another present, the present of the counseling or coaching session. And that we need to be aware, that sort of immediacy of the situation, we need to be aware of that all the time. This is actually the only moment in which the client leaves. Client doesn't live in the past that he's talking to you about, doesn't live in the future that he's talking to you about, doesn't even live in that sort of life outside at that point. He only lives in the present moment with you. And that is very special.
It sort of brings about it, maybe it's just my thinking this morning, but it sort of brings almost a spiritual-esqueness to it.
Yes. Yes, I mean, all great practitioners recognize that. We mentioned Buber. He was not a psychotherapist, but he was very much in that sort of working in that direction. But also there are others. Rogers himself, in the last of his books, he recognized that. He didn't call that I-Tao or anything like that. He called it sort of presence, and he said it has some sort of almost magical element. You feel different. It's almost like a spiritual element. Maslow spoke about it too. So you are on something there, definitely. I mean, it has that sort of transcendence in terms of that. If you do it right, you transcend yourself, and you are sort of created. You're creating that sort of bubble within which you and client are. And what is that? What I really mean. I mean, it's not something mystical or something like that. We all have ego boundaries. So you have ego boundary, I have ego boundaries. But at certain moments, I think we all experience certain moments when we go beyond this ego boundary, reach out to somebody else. For example, it doesn't need to be in a situation, a therapeutic situation or something like that. For example, when you make love or when you talk to a really good friend or something, like you feel that those boundaries between two of you melt, and you are like connected. You for a short period of time you become like almost like one person, and yet you have your own individuality. You keep your own individuality and so on. This is what we try to teach our students to create in the sessions with clients. That sort of bubble, where basically it's rather than I being in my own bubble and you being in your own bubble, we are together in one bubble.
Yeah, it's interesting. This also reminds me of group coaching, where we talk about this idea that we're all in our own little well, but we are connected, our waterways are connected, and yes, therefore the information can transfer between those wells.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And when you're in that state, you actually resonate. And we know there is plenty of evidence that actually we can resonate. We can actually align all the sort of vibrations that are going in our brains all the time. We can align them, and that has a hugely beneficial effect, because then really, not only you're working collaboratively with the client, but you're driving high speed in terms of the change.
So this, you know, just goes sort of puts fuel into this idea that the relationship is so important. Being able to, you know, be on that resonance field, being in the bubble with our practitioners and our clients. It's like, you know, that's the part of the key to the change, and as you said there, it creates that high speed change. Yeah.
Yes, that's the basis, and on which you can build all the sort of other things. Like you can bring all sort of interventions, you can use all sort of techniques, and so on and so on.
I guess it's really interesting. This sort of reminds me of when I'm, you know, been teaching, and people say, well, you know, my client didn't really want to do that thing or that intervention, or they weren't really up for it. And they say, do you have that? And I sort of go, well, no. And I guess that the reason that my no exists and I haven't been able to formulate is because we're in resonance at that point. Yes. We've done the groundwork. So if an intervention is offered, it's more likely to be received because the client is with me and I'm with them. And exactly. When we're new to this practice, that we're so busy throwing in the stuff that we can do, that we're not yet at that place where that resonance exists, I guess.
Absolutely, yes. And sort of, you may bring an intervention that you think is right for the client, but not what is necessarily right for the client. Because you have all your ideas and constructs and things like that, or maybe the first thing that comes to your mind and things like that. So basically that resonance helps you to choose next step. And you choose next step not because, not necessarily from your head, but from that sort of experience that you have to the client. So it comes to you naturally what sort of intervention at that point you should implement.
Yeah, which sort of makes me think about this idea of, you know, getting to that stage where we can trust the process and as you said earlier, that building confidence. So we're not trying, we're allowing things to flow. And I guess one of the differences between our work here would be, I'm very much in the coaching camp of work, yeah. Although I think that my edges are blurred. And with personal consultancy, you're also looking at the sort of the counselling or therapeutic side of the clients that you work with. So I guess I'm curious here about, you know, how you might define what we're doing when we're doing therapy as opposed to what we're doing when we're doing coaching, in order for a practitioner of personal consultancy to know the layers that they're moving through.
Yes. Okay. This is quite complicated because actually there is no good demarcation line between counseling and coaching. So certain counseling or therapeutic approaches is closer to coaching than to other therapeutic approaches. Mm. So take, for example, CBT. To me, it's much closer to coaching than, let's say, to psychoanalytic or a person-centered way of working. So we have to bear in mind that demarcation line, it may be somewhere else. But I will try now to simplify and put it in very, very, I don't want to say crude. It's not in crude way, but in sort of simple way, because of time restrictions that we have here. So counseling and therapeutic skills are mostly used to deal with internal world of the client. So that internal world may include dealing with some sort of, it usually involves internal conflicts. It could be conflicts between thinking and emotions, could be some deeper conflicts that are based on some sort of traumatic experiences in the childhood. It could be anxieties or some sort of anxieties about what we call existential anxieties about the world and uncertainties in the world and mortality and all that sort of stuff. So we deal with things that are going on with the process that are going on inside the client. Now, the other part is actually visible change. It could be behavioral change, changing certain habits or achieving certain goals and things like that. But the point is that other side is visible not only to the clients, but to other people. So basically, let's take an example of somebody who has issue with drinking too much. So in the first stage, when we use counseling and therapeutic skills, we may look behind a client's drinking. Maybe there are some sort of underlying reasons or causes for drinking. Maybe there is some sort of, the client picked up that as a way to deal with issues from his parents. Maybe there is some sort of anxiety that is going on in his present life and he's self-medicating. There could be all sorts of different reasons why somebody is drinking excessively. However, let's now imagine that we are really good and we manage to help clients to resolve all these sort of reasons and causes for drinking and his internal conflicts. Do you think that he will stop drinking? Not necessarily, because he also had developed a habit of drinking. He may have been drinking for 10, 20 years or something like that. And even if the causes for drinking are not there anymore, it may still be very difficult to change that habit. We need different set of skills to actually help client change that habit, to actually moderate his drinking or stop drinking. And these skills are mostly associated with coaching or CBT or solution-focused therapy and so on. So in a way, you can compare that with the house. So the first part is like building a good foundations, dealing with the foundations. And the second part is a building house on top of the foundations. We don't see the foundations, but they are necessary to have a house that will stay there. So house without foundations, not good. Foundations without house, useless.
This is interesting because as I think about that sort of metaphor of the foundations and the house, in a personal consultancy way, when I think about that in an animist way, I sort of go, well, we don't build the foundations in the work that we do as coaches or the teachings that we have, but we check those foundations.
Yeah.
So we go in and we have a little shake around and we go, so how are these foundations doing? And are these foundations stable enough without naming that? So we don't say, that's not the conversation with the client.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess that in that process, there is a checking of foundations or a noticing of foundation to go, are we okay to build a house here?
Yeah.
And if not, what might be going on here? And does it sit within my remit as a coach to work with you on your foundations? Because is it a small foundational repair? But if it's something bigger, then there is a call to work with somebody else. And I guess other styles of coaching may not check those foundations, may simply go in and do the decorations of that house.
Yes. Yes. And this is the biggest problem. This is one of the reasons why we started that integrative counseling and coaching program, because my feeling is that a lot of coaches don't actually check those foundations. And even if they do, and even if they see that something may not be completely right there, of course, particularly new coaches, they're reluctant to give up a client.
Mm.
So they, you know, in ideal world, coaches would then say, okay, now you need first of all to have some sort of counseling and therapy, and then you come back to me later when you sort out those foundations. But in my experience, it rarely happened. Very few practitioners are actually willing to give up the clients and therefore give up their income. So for that reason, we decided that maybe it's a good idea to put this together so that the same person can do both things.
So yeah, but, I mean, it's really interesting that, because there's an ethical question there.
Very much.
With a coach that's working with somebody that they recognize they don't have the skills to work with, or that there is something else going on that they're not addressing or allowing the client to address.
Yes, yes. And there is another issue. You know, sometimes things may not be transparent from the very beginning. You may have a few sessions with the client and then suddenly, I had that case when somebody came to me and he was purely coaching stuff, organizational skills. He was a bit sort of all over the place and messy and things like that. After three sessions, he suddenly starts crying, realizing that his job that he's doing is not something that he ever wanted to do. Basically, it was something to do with his father and impressing his father and things like that. And he was just absolutely, you know, he virtually broke apart. Now, I had my therapeutic training, so I could deal with that. But I can imagine that basically even if a coach who encounters such a situation says, okay, you need to see a therapist or counselor, but the client is crying now. He may see a counselor or therapist in 2 weeks, but he's crying now.
it's interesting to me because when I, you know, I've spoken to others and they've said, you know, if this is happening in the coaching space, coaches don't know what to do with that. And I sort of go, the coaches I work with would have the skill to manage that in that moment and to be with the client in that moment and to address what is coming into the space. But I also recognize that I've had a very particular training and, you know, working with Nick, the founder and CEO of Animus, who's also, you know, comes from an existential perspective and a philosophical perspective. I would imagine that there is something deeper in the training that we do at Animus than is necessarily noticed from an objective or an exterior perspective. There's something you have to kind of get into the training and really look at it to kind of go, actually, there's other things going on here that allow coaches or myself to sit in those spaces. Yes. Without the sort of having to do the therapy or the counseling full training, but having enough skill to hold that space
Exactly. And this is, I really like the term hold the space, because that's the essence of at least temporarily being able to deal with such situations. And then somebody can take over and do something more deeper and more lasting and so on. But this is exactly that's and if you do train students in anima to be able to hold space, that's great. This is really, really a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and it also makes me wonder about, you know, I was talking with Catherine Sandler, who holds, says she's an executive coach, but she holds a psychodynamic framework with her coaching. And it sort of made me, as we're having this conversation, it makes me wonder about, you know, is there a point in coaching where we start to expand and sort of take in these other ways of working? Not necessarily to be a therapist, but a little bit like Catherine, to hold those processes in place when working as a coach.
Absolutely. I think that actually the division between therapy and coaching is artificial. And there are all sorts of, if you like, reasons, practical reasons why people want to maintain that division. But actually, there is no reason for that. And I think what's happening right now, we have that counseling and therapy is expanding to include coaching or coaching skills, and coaching is expanding to include counseling and therapeutic skills. So one day we will meet. And personal consultancy is the step in that direction, where we can actually meet and work together, because at the end of the day, we have the same goal and we have the same intentions. And it's just a question that we are climbing the same mountain, but just from a different direction. We'll meet at the top.
Meet at the top.
Yes.
I love that. And I sort of wonder, as we're moving to meet at that top, what are the sort of the next steps for you in terms of developing or expanding the work that you're doing?
Yes. Okay. So for us, then the next step is definitely developing a training program in integrative supervision. There are very few supervisors who actually can supervise integrative practitioners. So we need training in integrative supervision. That's next step. And then, in the future, maybe further down the line, my personal desire would be to expand personal consultancy to include somatic element.
Mm.
So, for example, we know that your gut bacteria affects your brain and has effects on depression and anxiety and things like that. We know that exercises help you with depression and anxiety and so on. So I think a really, truly integrative and holistic approach would have to have also that somatic element.
Yeah, this sort of, as I've been talking with people, I have this dream that one day there'll be this kind of super masterclass where we'll all gather and discuss how we work and our modalities and what we bring to our practice in a forum where that can be listened to. And so people can kind of jump between, you know, I want to do a bit of the somatic stuff that Nathan does, and maybe do a bit of the narrative stuff of Drake, and then come into a personal consultancy with Nash and be able to see that kind of the spectrum of work that we can do with somebody. That's one of my mountaintops.
Well, I leave it to you to organize something like that, and I would be delighted to be invited to that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll add that to my list of things to create. I just, having these conversations with different practitioners, I just go, there are so many crossover points that allow me to go, oh, actually, so we can go in multiple directions as practitioners.
Exactly.
There is our strength point that, you know, or our expertise that we work from. But there is so much to learn from how other people think about this work. And the learning of their thinking, I think, is a useful tool or a useful resource that then expands our own thinking. So, you know, getting into your head allows me to think more about how I do my practice. It's like more of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is what we try to do in some ways by actually covering I think seven different counseling approaches beside coaching. So we cover CBT, solution focus, gestalt, transactional analysis, psychodynamic approaches, person-centered approaches, things like that. But this is not the same as talking to people. So it would be really good to have that forum in which we can all discuss these things together.
Great. I'll get on that forum. So Nash, it's been wonderful talking with you today. I've really got an insight to personal consultancy and how you work. If people want to find out more about you, where would they go?
They can go to University of East London. We have their two programs, but also they can go to Personal Wellbeing Centre website. That's personalwellbeingcentre.org. And they will find more details about personal consultancy there. And they can also go to our latest website, which is personalsynthesis.com. This is for self-help and self-development and personal development and so on.
Thank you. Brilliant. As I said, it's been great talking with you, Nash. And I look forward to further conversations and further forums.
Likewise, Robert, we'll be in touch. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
If you'd like to watch these episodes as well as listen, you can find the video interviews on our YouTube channel and website now. Thanks for tuning in to Coaching Uncaged. Join us again for more captivating conversations, exploring the art of coaching.